there. You are listening to the Conservation Spotlight, a regular segment of Willamette Wake Up on KMUZ Community Radio, 88.5 and 100.7 FM, and streaming at KMUZ.org. This is where Marion and Polk Soil and Water Conservation Districts shine a light on partnerships and programs that conserve our beautiful natural resources in the Willamette Valley. We're illuminating our collective mission of conserving soil, water, and natural resources for urban and agricultural audiences in the Willamette Valley.
I am your host, Chelsea Blank, the Natural Areas Conservation Planner with the Marion Soil and Water Conservation District. And on this episode, we are talking with Allison Green, the Statewide Defensible Space Program Coordinator from the Oregon State Fire Marshal. May is Wildfire Preparedness Month, and today we'll hear from Allison about some of the important risks to be aware of and preparedness techniques that can help folks get ready for this next wildfire season.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for having me, Chelsea.
So wildfire season is right around the corner, and that can be scary for a lot of homeowners to think about if they aren't aware of the risks and opportunities on their property. One of the big resources that Oregon is really lucky to have to help reduce wildfire risk is the Oregon State Fire Marshal, or OSFM. So I'd love to learn more about that. Can you give us a brief background on the role of OSFM, your role there, and what are some of the ways that you help folks with reducing wildfire risk?
Yeah, absolutely. So our agency, Oregon State Fire Marshal, we have kind of three critical roles when it comes to wildfire in the state of Oregon. First and foremost, of course, is response. We do provide response, either help or sending resources to areas affected by wildfire. Primarily, this is through the Oregon Fire Mutual Aid System, made up of all of our fire districts, the more than 300 fire districts, fire departments statewide. But primarily, right, we as me and some of my colleagues, we also focus on mitigation and preparedness and prevention programs around wildfire, because ultimately we know we will always have a response need, but the more we can prepare our communities, prevent the wildfires we can, and mitigate the risks, then everyone will be safer, including our responders. So we kind of have two prongs or two branches of our wildfire programs. One of them is our Fire Adapted Oregon or Community Wildfire Risk Reduction Group. And they actually work on essentially community or program building. So things like FireWise, things like community preparedness days, community-wide education, some of those types of programs. And they work not only with fire districts, but they work with all kinds of different partners to make sure that folks in the community are supported, that we try to build programs that many people can plug into. And sometimes they also help administer grants so that folks can also have some incentives and some, you know, breaking down some barriers to get that work done. The final kind of leg of this work is where my program comes in. My program is primarily focused on individual action and education and support. So I am the coordinator for the statewide defensible space program. So not only education and talking to folks about how we're losing homes in wildfire, what they can do. We also have customized, tailored educational home walkthroughs or home assessments. So folks can really get an idea on what needs to happen on their property to mitigate the risk on their property. The reality is wildfire, as scary and overwhelming as it may be, it is the only natural disaster we as humans can do something about. You know, for wildfire, I can do something in my yard. I can, you know, make some choices about where my plants are planted, if my gutters are clear, things like that. And it can actually lessen the intensity of a wildfire. I can't do the same thing when it comes to a hurricane. If I do something, you know, in my yard, it doesn't lessen the category of a hurricane. And so while wildfire is scary, it's always great to ground and remind ourselves that we can do something about it as people, as humans, and we can actually mitigate those risks and the ignition risks right there on our property.
Well, great. You mentioned a lot of really great things that I do really want to touch on later, but I want to focus a little bit more on some of the risk factors to be aware of first. Traditionally, wildfire risk has been considered more of a rural issue, but now we are seeing wildfires more and more in urban areas. Even, we've seen them in LA and Maui, and even in areas in South Salem, they've had to evacuate over the last few summers for fires that have popped up. So, what are some areas of greatest concern today, and what should folks really be paying attention to?
Well, the unfortunate reality for the folks living in Oregon is that wildfire, regardless of where we are, is not an if, but a when. And so we are not only seeing more and more impacts to our more rural communities or our wildland urban interface type communities, but we are seeing more and more wildfire impacts in more traditionally suburban and urban areas. There's a variety of factors that go into that. But at the same time, it is not a reason for us to throw up our hands and be like, well, we're all going to burn down, right? Ultimately, what we see as the greatest risk or the greatest ignition threat to our homes, is embers. So there are these tiny little guys that fly probably 1 to 3 miles ahead of the large flaming front. And they are finding places in our yard, whether it's the bark mulch that's touching our deck, it's our gutters that we haven't had a chance to clear, the pine needles that are laying over the top of our brush. They are finding these areas and then they are igniting during these wildfire events. And so ultimately, the focus for us is preventing the ignition of those embers when they land in our yard, because that could mean I could live in a townhouse in a suburban or urban environment. If I'm not paying attention to the area right around, there is still an ember risk in that area where I'm living. This could also be something where the wrong fire on the wrong day, right? It could be a 1 acre fire, not one that would make big national news. It still gives us an ember risk. And so ultimately, we all need to be thinking about where in our yard, where on our home, we see those areas that embers could land and create an ember risk, and slowly start chipping away at those areas rather than thinking about wildfires as something that happens on the back 40. We could have the wrong fire on the wrong day and still have ignition in an urban environment.
And also just remembering that it's not so much always the fires themselves, but the embers that you really have to be thinking of in preparedness, especially.
Absolutely. Well, and those dang embers, right? They're small, but when we have a large wildfire going, right, the amount of embers it generates is significant. And so anytime an ember will land, that potentially means another fire that our responders have to fight or that they won't be able to get to because they're overwhelmed. And so it is up to us. It's almost like we're our own firefighters in our own yard where we are preventing those ignitions before it even happens.
So another risk factor that I am curious about, and I'm sure many of our listeners are curious about, is just the extremely low snowpack and the warm winter weather that we experienced this year. That was a bit rare. And I know a lot of people are concerned about this being a particularly hot and dry summer because of that, especially in more of those kind of rural areas. So how do those conditions potentially influence the wildfire risk heading into summer, and what impacts might we see from that?
Oh man, well, I mean, I will tell you, low snowpack, warm winter, weather, of course, plays a huge role in wildfire spread, wildfire intensity. I will say the one thing that I always try to hold on to, maybe it's me being an optimist, but trying to hold on to hope, is even if we have fire weather conditions, we have low snowpack, we've had a warm winter, right? Insert all these risk factors. We still need ignitions for wildfire to happen, right? They don't just spontaneously happen because it's hot outside. While we as humans, we can't do anything about lightning, right? Things like that. We can do our part around preventing those ignitions, right? If we can reduce the amount of accidental human-caused fires, especially when we have these significant weather impacts coming in. That again means that we are playing our role as helping our firefighters when we get to those really awful fire conditions, that then they can focus on any natural starts like lightning rather than running around looking at those human-caused fires as well. And so, like, yes, the weather conditions, they are setting us up for potentially a busy and awful fire season, but at the same time, we won't have an awful fire season if we don't have the starts to those wildfires. Right? I mean, this is the struggle with prevention is that humans, sometimes we create troubles for ourselves, even if they're accidental. Right, and a lot of time, one big misconception is when people hear human cause, they assume that it was intentional, somebody meaning misharm. I mean, 9 times out of 10, humans think, I mean, almost 100% of the time, human caused fires are purely by accident. However, they are still attributed to humans. And so ultimately, yes, escape debris burning has been the number one cause of human caused fires in the state of Oregon, probably, I think, going on 3 or 4 years now. And so that is one of those items that ultimately, if folks are going to burn, and truly, we highly recommend composting or recycling your green debris, right? Completely taking the risk out of it. However, if folks are going to burn, call your local fire district. Make sure it's a burn day. Never, ever leave that burn pile unattended. Have water handy, right? Follow all of the safe burning practices. If you are going to burn, again, we highly recommend that folks recycle that debris or compost it. And so ultimately, it takes the burning completely out of the equation. But a lot of times, when we have escape debris burning, folks are burning on days that it's not a burn day. They walked away from it to go have lunch or whatever it may be. It is something that constantly needs to be monitored and done safely and within all of the local regulations. I would say a lot of local fire districts have amazing recommendations, right? Like making sure that you don't set a burn pile too close to a building, for instance, right? You don't want to be doing that within 5 feet, for instance, typically not within 30. Right? All of these things go into making sure that you are burning when there's the least amount of chance for it to escape. So, right, maybe covering it in the summer months, so that it's dry when we're well into winter, all of those things. But I would really send folks towards their local jurisdiction for any local regulations. But it is something where, folks doing it, especially when it's not a burn day, or waiting for the first, nice day because they know it'll burn well, make sure that you are following when it's open, where you can burn, and that you're doing it safely.
Just a quick update. If you are now joining us, I am here with Allison Green, the Defensible Space Program Coordinator with the Oregon State Fire Marshal. And you are listening to the Conservation Spotlight, a regular segment of Willamette Wake Up on KMUZ Community Radio 88.5 and 100.7 FM, and streaming on KMUZ.org. So now that we've learned a little bit about some wildfire risk factors in Oregon, and you even touched on some of the kind of prevention practices that you recommend folks, I'd love to dive more into some of the tools that people, homeowners, can use to reduce their risk even more. So what are some of the main things that you recommend folks and that you look for during a defensible space assessment?
I always like to say this is when we shift from prevention, which is really making sure that we stop fires before they happen, to preparedness, right? Because ultimately, we talked about a lot of times it's not if it's when. We still have lightning, we still have natural ignition sources. And so, this is really where folks can prepare and mitigate and still make sure that their home is as safe as possible. And so, one of the first things when I'm meeting with a homeowner, when we're doing a defensible space assessment, is we first kind of look at the house itself. But when we look at the defensible space, and spoiler alerts for folks that have never heard this before, it has nothing to do with football. This is really the first 5 feet around a house, is becoming, in the emerging research, the absolute key to homes surviving a wildfire. Some of the most recent research out of the devastating fires in LA in 2025 that any homes that had more than 25% coverage of any sort of vegetation or man-made materials, their destruction was almost guaranteed. And so focusing first on that first 5 feet, having a non-combustible barrier around the house itself, whether that's a gravel walkway, it's a paver walkway, even bare dirt while you're getting kind of things together to put down rock, and making sure that not only you're lessening the fire's intensity as it's getting to the house, but you stop it from reaching the house within that first 5 feet. That is also where we find a lot of embers collect during ember storms. In large wildfires, they land in that first 5 feet, and then they're able to pick up essentially steam there if they have a lot of vegetation that they're landing in. And so that first 5 feet is the first place that I talk to folks about. The next one is that we talk about it's the next zone. It's 5 to 30 feet around the house. And this is really where, again, and it's not a moonscape. I don't need 30 feet of rock all the way around everybody's house, right? This is strategically placing plants, the right plant in the right place, essentially, right, Chelsea, like you said, where this is where we have fire-resistant plants. They are well-maintained, they're well-watered, they're well-trimmed, and we don't have massive, what we call fuel ladders, where anything, heaven forbid, was burning on the ground. We don't have small plants underneath medium-sized plants, underneath large plants that then can get up into those large plants with a lot of energy and flame. And so we talk about what kind of plants we want in that area. Do we want some shade trees that are well limbed? They're well away from the house. All of those areas in that first 30 feet, again, it's strategic. It's well watered. One that we hear a lot is lean, clean, and green. So lean means any grass is cut to 4 inches during fire season. Clean means there isn't a bunch of leaves or cedar needles or all kinds of different dead debris from the winter. And green means that it's well-maintained and well-watered that first 30 feet. And then if you have more space, we have kind of the intermediate zone or the zone outside that 30 feet to about 100 feet. And this is really where we can start having a bit more vegetation, not a whole bunch, but you could have a few clusters of a bunch of trees or some clusters of brush, kind of these kinds of things where, again, it's strategically placed, but it's a place where that is if the fire is coming at your home, it's starting to drop in intensity, and it drops in intensity even more in that 5 to 30, and then it stops in that first 5 feet before it gets to your house. And so if you're working on this for the very first time, start in your 0 to 5 feet, work out to 30, and then work out from there. This is a graduated process. It's not something that can be done overnight. Be kind to yourself and have a lot of grace, but start right around the home, your deck and your fence, and then work out from there.
So kind of as you were giving some of those recommendations for those different zone areas, that definitely, you know, gets me thinking for different audiences, you know, for urban folks who might be worried about wildfire versus folks who are in kind of more forested areas, rural properties. Do your recommendations for defensible space differ between dense neighborhoods and rural properties? Can you speak to that at all?
Yeah, I can. So the general principles and frankly, some of the risk factors, they do not change from home to home, right? We are always looking for those like ember traps kind of places, right? Regardless if you have a neighbor, you know, within 15 feet or you have acres between you and your neighbor, right? Primarily, we're looking at protecting the house. But defensible space is going to look different depending on where folks live. You know, for instance, in dense neighborhoods, you know, we just talked about the three zones. For some folks, they may have a neighbor or two in that 30 feet radius. And so ultimately, some of our decisions, conversations, the values that they want for their yard, we have to get really strategic about plant choices, where things are placed, where we want shade, all those kinds of things. And honestly, looking at some hardscaping in certain areas for like retaining walls, like we have to get creative when we're in dense neighborhoods because we don't have a lot of space to work with when we're talking about defensible space and when we're talking about ember traps. That is also a place in dense neighborhoods. We talk a whole heck of a lot about being a good neighbor, and taking on things like working with your neighbors so you are all protected at once. Because if somebody is not able to do the work, if they're having a hard time getting started, they ultimately, right, their home is at risk, and ultimately they could be a risk factor to their other neighbors. And so we never come out and we start, pointing fingers like, no, your house is bad. No, we go talk to them about what support they need, talk to them about what you've learned about defensible space, ask them how you can help. Because sometimes this can feel very overwhelming and folks have a hard time getting started. But once you do and you take in that bite-sized chunks, that's really where we see whole neighborhoods come in together to protect one another and being good neighbors. For rural properties, again, right, we're working with neighbors. We want everybody to be protected, but a lot of times we have a lot more flexibility because we have a lot more space to think about how that defensible space looks. But ultimately, we still have the same principles in rural properties, but we might be able to have more options for wildlife habitat and some of those things if we have, an acre or two to work with, even half an acre, we have a little bit more leeway on what that looks like. And so ultimately, FireWise is an amazing grassroots effort kind of model that folks can take up. It's not the only one out there, but it's probably the most well known. And so it is a way to organize around wildfire. It is not once you get your FireWise sign, you're done, you never have to do work again. But it is a way to help organize around a common topic. At the same time, again, this is just kind of being good neighbors. And, Chelsea, to your point, it can be expensive. And so, is there a way for everybody, if you guys decide on an activity, whether that's limbing trees or getting things picked up or, somebody coming and taking out, brush or whatever it may be, if you all go in on a contract together or find a way to cost share, or even if you have some young kids that are trying to make some money and you're clear with them, right? It's a way to have the whole community organize around the risk and you all feel safer at the end of it.
Yeah, so shifting our focus a little bit to the structure itself, what is home hardening and how can that help in reducing wildfire risk even more?
Absolutely. So home hardening, essentially, I tell folks defensible space is our yard. Home hardening is what the building itself is made of or how it's constructed. And so really these two items, these two concepts, they work in tandem constantly. So what we're trying to do with defensible space is essentially turn the dial down or ramp the dial down on exposure. Right. So we're trying to ramp that down and take away the exposure of wildfire and intensity away with what we do in our yard. When we're looking at home hardening, we're trying to turn the dial up in resiliency for our house. So, right, like it can take an ember shower or it can survive a radiant heat threat if we make some building choices. And so typically, overall, we look at building materials that meet what's called Class A or non-combustibility standards, which means they have been tested over and over and over and over and over again to make sure that it's not just that they're hard to ignite, it's that they won't ignite at all. Also, it is a way to make sure that any ember points are taken away from what our house is built of and how, essentially, how secure it is to ember attack. So things like venting, things like the, things that might be stored up against or underneath your deck. It's all of those things, but it's primarily focused on what the home is made of. And then the defensible space is kind of what is happening in our yard. So they have to work together all the time. And there's always a give and take, but those two, they are a system and they go together. As folks are thinking about it into the future, part of just maintenance as a homeowner when you're doing some of these bigger projects, just try to keep wildfire in mind. But for some like immediate things that would be phenomenal for folks to think about for home hardening is first and foremost, your venting structure on your house is one of honestly the easiest retrofits to do. So looking at your vents, and those are not your dryer vent, not anything that pushes air out, but it's essentially your under eave vents or your under home vent. If they are covered with anything less than an eighth of an inch metal mesh, go ahead and screen them with an eighth of an inch metal mesh. One of the easiest ways that folks have told me is to see if your mesh is too big is if you have a golf tee handy, if you can fit that golf tee through your metal mesh, that means it's too big and it will let embers into your crawl spaces, into under home spaces, and that can ultimately be what ignites your house. Another thing for folks to potentially think about is in Oregon, we see a lot of wood fences, especially in suburban and urban areas where they connect home to home to home to home across the board. If it's connected to the house, it is part of the house, and that includes our fences. And so making sure not only that the base of the fence is mitigated, so not vegetation leading right up to the fence where it can ignite, but consider installing some sort of metal or non-combustible attachment to where the fence connects to the house is absolutely key to making sure that if the fence ignites, it's not going to lead directly to the house. You don't have to replace the whole fence, just the first 5 feet, maybe replace it with a metal gate or something like that. That is absolutely key when it comes to fences.
So, how can one access or get a defensible space assessment done on their property?
That's a great question. So I would highly recommend if folks want to do this, it is offered for free statewide. And these are fire professionals. They come out, they give you educational recommendations. There's no required follow-up. It's not shared with insurance companies, right? It is just between you and your assessor. So if you would like that to happen, go ahead and go to OregonDefensibleSpace.org or .org. And you can actually follow it through to request an assessment online. And also if folks have, any questions, our contact is on there as well. But we would love to have, come out and provide that education. It's either your local fire district, or it is folks from Oregon State Fire Marshal, and we schedule a time with you to do a one-on-one tailored walkthrough of your property. Oh, absolutely. Well, and thank you so much for having me. And this is going to be a long haul for a lot of folks. I know it has been for me on my property, but we got to start somewhere. But it was a joy to be here.
Well, I have been talking today with Allison Green with the Oregon State Fire Marshal about wildfire risk and preparedness. And I'm your host, Chelsea Blank, with the Marion Soil and Water Conservation District. Thank you for tuning into this episode of Conservation Spotlight. We hope you enjoyed our conversation on wildfire risk and preparedness. Every effort counts, and together we can make a difference in conserving our natural resources. If you would like more information on this topic, please visit our website at marionswcd.net and OregonDefensibleSpace.org. Oregon State University Extension Service Fire Program and Oregon Department of Forestry. You can also learn more about wildfire programs and planning tools at Oregon Explores Wildfire page. To learn about local evacuation alerts and wildfire status, please visit Marion County Emergency Management. And if you liked what you heard here on Conservation Spotlight, tune in next month to KMUZ to hear more at 100.7 or 88.5 FM, the third Wednesday every month during Willamette Wake Up. Thanks for listening and keep up the conservation conversation.